My guest today for Listen to This is Dr. Mark Cox. He is professor of tuba and euphonium at the CMU School of Music. Welcome, Mark. How are you?
I am well, thank you. Thanks for asking me to be on here.
Yeah, thanks for joining me today. So, professor of tuba and euphonium, right off the bat, let's get this out of the way. We have
the elephant in the room.
Yes. We have tuba. We have sousaphone, we have euphonium, we have baritone horn.
Yeah. And what are the differences between them?
Sort that out for us, please.
It's actually pretty easy to sort out. Back in the 1800s, when the tuba was invented, military groups, which is what it was invented for, had to march with the tubas you see that we call upright, the ones you see in bands and orchestras. And those are heavy, holding those things out in front of you. They had straps to help hold them and everything. Then John Philip Sousa came along with the President's Band and said, you know, let's see if we can find a better way of doing this. So he got together with C.G. Kahn, and they unwrapped the tuba and rewrapped it up so that you could carry it on your shoulder, and that became the sousaphone, John Philip Sousa. Now, the original one, which is up at Interlaken, which I've played several times, the bell went up like you see. We call that a concert bell. Well, back again in the old days, there was only one microphone in the hall when they recorded orchestras. And if you had a bell pointing up, you could never hear the tuba on the recording. So they invented something called the recording bell, which turned the bell forward. And so when Sousa first started, the bell went up and everyone else in the band pointed forward. So then they took that bell off and they put a recording bell on, and that's the modern day sousaphone that we know.
Wow. And now, that's the thing that you see
in
the marching bands, right, on the football field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the exact same instrument. It just makes it easier to carry. Mm-hmm. Then you get the euphonium, which is we often call like a baby tuba. It's a smaller version of it. It's a what we call a conical, which is cone-shaped like the tuba. So it's a darker, more resonant, deeper sound to it. And that's mostly what everybody plays. The problem is the name baritone stuck to it, which is actually a misnomer. They're not baritone. People will tell me, well, I've got a small one. I've got one with valves in front. I've got one with a recording bell. Those are all still euphoniums. They're conical shape. They grow from the mouthpiece to the bell. But the problem is the publishing companies all put the word baritone on it. So I talked to the head of one of the largest publishing companies once and asked, who's a tuba player from CMU, long before my time teaching there. And I asked him, why do you guys do that? He says, well, because that's what all the band directors say is baritone. So we put it on there. Then I tried to ask band directors, why do you call it baritone? They said, well, that's because music publishers put it on there. So it's kind of like calling a viola a violin. Violas do not like that. And with us, euphoniums. Now, what is a baritone? Basically, it's a valve trombone that points up. So it looks like a euphonium, but it's what we call a cylindrical or a cylinder, a piece of tubing. From the mouthpiece to the flare of the bell, it doesn't grow. So trumpet, trombone, and baritone are in one family. Cornet, horn, euphonium, and tuba are in the other family. The cylindrical was the first, conical was the second. So yes, most everybody out there will argue with me if they play a baritone and they'll show me their instrument. Nope, it's just a euphonium, and not just a euphonium. I love euphonium. But that's the difference, is that, matter of fact, my trombone colleague really should teach baritone lessons, which we own two baritones at CMU for the brass band that we have every now and again. And my students will take lessons with Dr. Lindahl, because its approach is more trombone-like. Mm-hmm. Then we're back to euphonium. They're with me, which is more of the tuba approach, the rounder sound, the less aggressiveness to it. Like a trombone, you're going to hear like in a jazz band or something.
Thank you for sorting that out. Now we know.
Absolutely.
And you mentioned that the tuba is pretty heavy, and it is heavy to carry around and it's heavy to hold. How much does it weigh?
Tubas come in all different sizes, those type you see in concerts. The ones we call an upright. The little one that I play on is called a soloing tuba, an F tuba, and that one probably weighs maybe about 12, 15 pounds. My one that I play over in the Midland Symphony Orchestra and other places, that one probably weighs around 20, but you can get up to some pretty hefty tubas bigger than what I play on that are upwards to like 25, 30 pounds. So with this heavy in your lap, heavy carrying around, But I often joke when people say, don't you wish you played flute? And I'm like, nope, this is the only good exercise that I get carrying this thing around.
You know, people ask me that when I carry my horn around, which of course is not as big as your tuba case, but they say the same thing. Don't you wish you played the flute or the piccolo? And I'd say, no, I really like playing the horn.
Same with me with tuba. And then I often laugh with them when I have to pull up for a concert somewhere where we're doing like outdoors. The flute player has to park a mile and a half away, and with me, I get to park 30 feet away because I have such, oh, you play tuba? Go right there.
Oh, so, yeah.
Actually, sometimes get special benefits with that.
Yeah, that's true. And again, you get your weightlifting when you're traveling, too. So.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And,
so,
and I've been doing this for 46 years. So 46 years, and actually, there are many times I'm carrying both my orchestral and my soloing horn at the same time. One's on my back like a backpack, and the other one's over my shoulder with a strap.
How does the tuba function in the orchestra? Obviously, it's a very low instrument, but what is the tuba's purpose in an ensemble?
Really, the tuba's purpose is it's the foundation of a band or an orchestra. And the main thing that we really, actually, there's two functions we have to do. The first of the two functions is we set intonation. And you're supposed to listen down to the lowest instrument, and that instrument is the one that sets what's in tune and what's not in tune. So as I laugh with my students, even if you play a note out of tune, you're still the bottom, and that's what they have to tune to is that out-of-tune note. So don't play it out of tune. So we're really there to do that. Now, because string, bass, and timpani are also low, they also do that. But the tuba is so much louder, we can often drown out those people in a big Mahler symphony. So we need to really be accurate with our tuning so that the whole orchestra doesn't have to worry about it and they can just play their parts. Second thing we're often used for is metronomic. You hear the oompa part, which we tuba players, pretty much anything any other instrument can do, we can do. But what we're thought about is the type of instrument that keeps the beat steady, especially in bands, especially when it comes to marches. Bum, 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 bum. Yes, that is our bread and butter. I laugh. My daughter is a horn player, and she gets the afterbeat. So we can do duets here at the house where I play the downbeats and she plays the afterbeats, and that's our duet.
Yeah.
But those are the two big things to do with that. And then beyond that, a lot of times because of its sonorous sound, we're there to really fill out full chords. Those gorgeous, lush chords that come out of a Strauss symphony, those are often built from the bottom up again. And so we have to make sure that we have this nice, big, round sound.
So you're really the foundation of the ensemble.
Yeah, and I have a quartet at CMU that I actually call Central Foundation because Central Michigan University is the central part and foundation because that's the part, like you said, everyone has to build upon.
So that's a very, very important job you have there.
Absolutely.
Yes, yes. Let's listen to some music that you've chosen.
So the first piece that I would like the listeners to listen to is a piece called Fnugg, that's F-N-U-G-G, by tuba player and composer Øystein Bodsvik, a Norwegian tuba player, good friend. And he wrote this piece. I absolutely love it. And everywhere I've heard him play it, the audiences go crazy. It means snowflake. His idea was every performance of this piece should be different. They shouldn't be the same. And in this thing, he does something that we call multiphonics, which tuba players can do really well, and that is sing while we're playing at the same time. So in essence, we're doing a duet with ourselves. And then not only is he doing that, kind of like a group like the Pentatonics, he beatboxes all the percussion stuff to go with it. So everything you hear on this piece is one person playing a tuba.
Oh, wow. We'll look forward to that. Fnugg by Øystein Bodsvik.
That was Fnugg by Øystein Bodsvik. I hope you got a chance to really get it, to listen to it. And like I said, if you missed it, that was one tuba player doing all the parts at the same time. Now, in today's pandemic world, we see a lot of multiple people performing at the same time, which is really impossible to do with lag time. And so somebody usually edits it all together. With this recording, he does everything all at once. He sings, he beatboxes, he does it all in just one sitting. I've performed it. I've had students perform it. And like I said, it's an absolutely fun piece to play.
Dr. Mark Cox, professor of tuba and euphonium at the CMU School of Music, is my guest today for Listen to This. How did you come to play the tuba?
So I have been one of those music geeks from before I should have been. One of those, I think they call them bubbleheads or something like that. When I was little, my parents said I used to point the tuba and the sousaphones out in parades and concerts and everything. When I was in third grade, when I got a record player, I'm from a town in California that's home to Buck Owens and Merle Haggard. It's Bakersfield, California. We didn't have any classical stations. Yet, I asked for Beethoven's Fifth Symphony for the record back as a third grader. And when I got into fourth grade and had to play that lovely instrument called the symphonette, flutophone, you know, those wonderful, I told my band director I was going to play tuba. And when we got done at the end of fourth grade, that's what I auditioned on. And 46 years later, I'm still playing it and still loving it.
Wow.
I probably have another 20 years to go on it, too.
But the tuba is, you know, because it is a large instrument, I would think that it's not an instrument that would be conducive for a very young person to begin as a beginner.
So my band had only sousaphones, and we have what's called a sousaphone chair. It's this thing that looks like it should be a satellite, holding up a satellite dish or something, and the sousaphone goes into it. And when I slid into the chair, the mouthpiece was about 6 inches above me, and my parents had to put two telephone books underneath me to be able to get up to the mouthpiece. So, yes, most of the time, people will start out, young people, on euphonium if they really want to play, just so they can have a better feel for it. But there are all sorts of stands out there that can hold upright and sousaphone tubas, so that if a younger person wants to do it, it's there to be done. My first parade was fifth grade, and it was down at, because my hometown's an hour and a half from Disney. I marched Disney's 1976 parade, where Bicentennial Parade, which was a couple of miles long, as a fifth grader. I mean, you just, if you want to do it, you just put your head down and do it, and that's what I've kind of done with my tuba all my life. Is I have a goal, and I move forward with it.
And you still love it.
I do, absolutely. I wouldn't be playing it at this point because it's a lot of work. You have to practice all the time. We have to set things up of the promotions that we have to go through to get concerts around. And, you know, it's just, but it's what I love doing. It's fun.
Let's listen to some more music.
Sounds good. So next, I think would be fun to hear is something from a friend of mine who has since passed, John Griffiths. John is, in my opinion, one of Canada's greatest tuba players, a very close personal friend. Matter of fact, I think about him most every day because the mouthpiece I play on is the John Griffiths tuba mouthpiece. He and I play the same solo instrument. There are five different types of tuba, upright tubas, five different keys that we have to learn for five different types. There's the double D flat, which is what you know in bands and sousaphones. There's the double C, which is what you see in orchestras. Then there's what I call the soloing horns, the F, which is what you'll see me with a lot of times these days. As a Yamaha artist, I play on a Yamaha F tuba. And there's the E-flat tuba. And then there's the German bugle chord G tubas. So a lot of my students have to learn three or four different fingering patterns for the tubas. But the piece we're going to hear from him is a piece called T for Tuba, written by his colleague. He taught at the University of Regina in Saskatchewan. And Elizabeth Rom wrote this piece, and she wrote a couple of dozen pieces for tuba, and I just love their pieces. I play them all the time. And in this piece, you're going to hear John sound like a wannabe trumpet player doing lead jazz or something. It's high, and it's a tuba. Matter of fact, one thing you probably didn't know is tuba has the widest octave range of all wind instruments. We can go off the piano, and a good player can usually do 6 to 8 octaves on their instrument. And so you're going to hear John up in that upper tessitura, especially in the beginning cadenza, that I was always admired him as a player for being able to make look so easy.
That's a really good fun fact about the range of the tuba.
Yeah, the problem is, you show it to a composer, and then they employ all that range, and then you've got your work cut out for you.
Yes. Well, let's listen to T for Tuba. That was John Griffiths with T for tuba. And my guest today, Dr. Mark Cox, professor of tuba and euphonium at the CMU School of Music. Thanks again for joining me today.
Well, thanks for having me. I always love talking with you. It's always enjoyable.
You said you love playing the tuba, and clearly you love the instrument and the euphonium too. Why do you love it? What do you love about it?
Well, one of the things about the tuba is, I hate to say this, it sounds terrible. I've just been trying to think of a better way to say it, but, you know, people's expectation of a tuba is very low. You play something more than quarter notes and people are impressed. So unlike a violinist, who everyone expects you to be at that super violin sort of playing ability, you pick up the tuba, you just get to have fun with it, and you could do, I mean, we can play Carnival of Venice, which I have. We can play, I play Chartist. I've played a number of that fast pieces. I've played all sorts of beautiful aria pieces. I love playing. If I hadn't been a tuba player, I probably would have been a tenor as a vocalist, because I love to sing. So I play a lot of vocal music on my horn. But I get to just play and have fun with my music, and people are just often astonished, amazed, and can't believe that a tuba can do it. So it really takes the pressure off as a performer, and I get to be more of an entertainer. I get to just sit down and play and entertain the audience and just have a good time with it. I love the sound of it, and it's kind of fun being the only one, too. Bands, there's multiples, but in orchestras, there's only a few pieces that have two tubas. Berlioz will have two tubas, things along that line, but mostly it's just me. We're supposed to play Shostakovich's Rhythm Symphony last year. There was going to be 8 9 horns, 6 trumpets, 4 trombones, and just one tuba. So, you know, I get to kind of be the king of my domain.
Well, and you know, you did just raise the bar for folks who have low expectations of tuba players.
Well, that's what I feel my job is to do that. One of my teachers once told me that we're musicians. We happen to play tuba, so why can't we do what everybody else does? And I learned that in high school, and that's been my mentality ever since, is that I don't play tuba. I'm a musician who puts my musical emphasis through a big piece of brass.
Yes, yes. Now, you did mention a couple of familiar pieces there, the Berlioz, the Shostakovich. What are some iconic pieces that folks may be familiar with that feature the tuba, or there's a famous tuba passage?
Well, one of the ones you hear all the time on commercials and everything is Ride of the Valkyries. You hear that bum, 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 bum. I mean, I grew up listening to Bugs Bunny cartoons and everything, so that's one you're going to hear a lot. Pictures at an Exhibition has a huge tuba solo, but that one's a little bit odd because it's a high kind of French tuba solo, and a lot of orchestras will actually have the trombonist in the orchestra play it on euphonium and not have the tuba player play it. That's another one people know. One that's becoming more and more popular, which is movie music. Well, of course, Jaws, you know, the opening, but that's not really a solo. But Jabba the Hutt, the original Star Wars didn't have the scene with Jabba and Han Solo in it talking. And when they put it back in, that's all one big tuba solo in that whole section, which we actually have now as a transcription. The orchestra part has been made a piano part, so we can actually play it as a concert piece on a recital.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But those are some ones. And of course, Symphonie Fantastique with the Dies Irae, which you hear in the opening of The Shining. That's two tubas. Actually, the funny part was that was written for two ophicleides. That's the predecessor to the tuba. And they look like bassoons with mouthpieces. And when Berlioz heard the tuba, see, tuba is one of the second newest instrument in the band or orchestra. The newest instrument is the saxophone. The tuba came in the 1830s, the saxophone, 1850s-ish. And so when Berlioz heard the tuba, he said, get rid of those ophicleides and put the tubas on it. So to this day, our part still says ophicleide, but we have two tubas that cover that. And that's why there's two on there, is that he felt the ophicleide missed so many notes that if he had two on there, at least he hopefully could get all the notes sounded
between
out.
Between the two of them. Yeah.
Exactly. Matter of fact, it's often Mendelssohn wrote a piece that has both the ophicleide and its predecessor, the serpent, in it. And it's woodwinds, horns, and those two instruments. So it looks funny these days when that piece is performed with two tubas sitting with this very small orchestra, because there are a select group of people who still play those instruments. But it's kind of expensive to bring them in for a lot of orchestras. And so they end up just having two local the principal tuba player and probably the assistant principal, the substitute, will come in and play the second part.
Well, I think it is interesting for our listeners to know that a lot of the music that we hear on WCMU was written in a time where instruments were very, very different and orchestras looked very different than they do now.
Absolutely. Matter of fact, I did a paper once on the Alpha Clyde, and they didn't know where to put it. Half the orchestra seating charts had them sitting next to the bassoons, and the other half had them sitting next to the trombones where the tuba now sits today. So, yeah, they were still trying to figure out where things went.
So they had kind of an identity crisis there. Maybe that's why we don't see them anymore.
That could be.
So I think, and tell me if you agree, that instruments and personalities sort of go together. You know, there's a certain type of person who plays the violin or the piano or the tuba. You agree?
I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, but yes, I do agree. Tuba players often are the class clowns. We joke around. Trombonists are the quiet class clowns who don't get in trouble. The tuba player gets busted for their jokes. Yes, and I won't get into the rest of them because I don't want to offend people. But yeah, we do talk about, oh yeah, that person definitely fits that instrument. Yeah, they do kind of have and my wife is definitely, in some ways, she's a pianist. She's the other Dr. Cox in the family. And in some ways, she's very not much like a pianist. In other ways, she is definitely like a pianist. And I'm not going to say what that is. But yeah, no, I think we do kind of, I'm not sure if we follow the instrument or if the instrument melds us into that personality. But
that's a good point.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. One of the ways the tuba players like to have fun every year, and they've been doing this for a while, is Tuba Christmas. And this is
Merry
the perfect
Tuba Christmas.
Yes, this is the perfect time of year to talk about that. Can you tell us real briefly, and then we'll hear some Tuba Christmas music, too.
A little history behind Merry Tuba Christmas. Bill Bell, one of the famous tuba players back in the 50s and 60s, taught at Indiana University. When he passed away, his student, Harvey Phillips, another famous tuba player, actually 60 Minutes did a big expose on Harvey. Harvey put together something that was a mass gathering of tuba euphonium players doing Christmas music in quartet fashion in honor of his former teacher, Bill Bell. Well, that caught on so much that there are over 300 Merry Tuba Christmas concerts in our country every year. I first played my first tuba Christmas concert back when I was a junior in high school. I drove down to L.A. and I played it, and actually 60 Minutes was there, and they dropped their microphone between my bell and another and a famous tuba player, Jim Self, and his bell. And you can go to Chicago and hear 300 or 400 there in New York. Well, this is pre-pandemic, of course. And out in Kansas, they just beat the world's record for it and had something like over 750, I think that's the number, tuba and euphonium players playing the music. So it's just this fun gathering, and you can use the same book. It's a book that was transcribed by the composer Alec Wilder, who was Harvey Phillips' friend. And you can take your book and just pay the small fee to play, and you can perform in Tuba Christmases over and over and over throughout the season if you want to. So it's just a fun gathering for us.
Well, since we are not having mass gatherings this year, are they having a Merry Tuba Christmas virtual celebration?
Actually, they've been having some, but they've been socially distancing and they've been limiting the amount of players. It's been kind of a first come, first serve sort of a thing. We had one for a while. I had one for a while at CMU, and now Midland's been putting one on here. And you can get online. They actually have a website that shows the Merry Tuba Christmas website shows where these concerts occur. And so I do know that some of them are going, but they are playing with masks on. They are social distancing. I've been following it on Facebook. There's a couple of tuba feeds on Facebook that have been talking about it, and a lot of others of us saying, oh, we miss doing it because we're not close enough to an area to actually go and play in one.
Well, let's listen to a recording because we have that. Let's listen to some Christmas tunes from Merry Tuba Christmas. Dr. Mark Cox, professor of tuba and euphonium at the CMU School of Music, has been my guest today for Listen to This, and thanks again for being here and for taking the time today.
Thanks for having me. This has been a blast.
One more question for you. Give us your, air quotes here, elevator pitch. Why a young musician should consider playing the tuba or the euphonium?
That is a good question. I do have to say that most people end up playing it because they started on another instrument like trumpet and didn't like it, and a band director enticed them to switch because you could have a free instrument to borrow and everything. But I would say if you're going to want to play tuba, you know, the tuba is such a versatile instrument that is so unknown to many that when you sit down and play it, just the feel of the vibration of the dark, low sounds, the beauty that it can create, where you can make it, I mean, there's so much that can be done with it. You've heard multiphonics, you've heard Christmas music, we play all sorts of stuff. It's just an untapped diamond in the rough for a lot of people. And it just opens up so much for a young player to be able to experiment. And let's be honest, usually there's only one or two. So you really get to focus, and people focus on you with the instrument, not lost in a pool of 18 like you see in some of the other instruments.
That's very well said. Thank you. And I'm sure you will welcome any young student to your studio at CMU.
Absolutely. I've now with the whole pandemic, the whole online lessons thing, a year ago would have been difficult to do. Now I've already done several this week. So, you know, that's the other thing, is that we can definitely reach out more to players these days from where I don't have to drive 50 miles. They don't have to drive 200 miles to take a lesson. We can it's not the best thing in the world to do it online, but it does allow us to be able to expand ourselves and be able to get out and help those that need help.
A little bit of a silver lining there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dr. Mark Cox, professor of tuba and euphonium at the CMU School of Music, thanks again so much for being my guest today for Listen to This.
And thanks for asking me. Obviously, I could talk another hour about tuba if you wanted it. Part B coming up. No, but thanks again for having me. And let me take a second to tell people about what I love doing every day.
Thank you, and happy holidays to you.
Happy holidays to you, too.